Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Anne Ball, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, American companies put fewer robots in place during 2019 than they did the year before, Reuters news agency reports. That is the first decrease in shipped robots since 2015. Robot shipments last year fell to 23,758. That is a more than 16% drop from the year before. That information comes from the Association for Advancing Automation, an industry group based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Robot shipments also fell in Mexico last year, decreasing 25% to 3,263. Shipments in Canada were about the same, with just over 3,000 robots shipped. A major goal of President Donald Trump's administration has been to get manufacturers to bring jobs back to the United States. New robotics permit U.S. companies to compete with low-cost labor in China and other countries. Some experts, however, believe there is a slowdown in manufacturing. Alexander Shikani is vice president of the Association for Advancing Automation. He said a slowdown is not likely to last a long time. He noted that orders for new robots in North America increased last year by 1.6% to 29,988 units. The largest driver of that growth was a more than 50% increase in orders from car makers. Shikani said the car industry is making robots part of their investment for the future. U.S. carmaker General Motors recently announced that it was investing $2.2 billion to build electric trucks and self-driving electric vehicles at its factory near Detroit, Michigan. Hytrol Conveyor Company Incorporated is a private company in Jonesboro, Arkansas. It makes conveyor belts and sold over $200 million of products last year. The company did not cut back on new robots in 2019. It spent $1.9 million last year to automate its assembly line. David Peacock is the company's president. He said, "The company realized 3 years ago that it would have trouble meeting demand without more robots. However, the investments have not cut jobs. The number of workers at Hytrol Conveyor's factory has increased 18% over the past 3 years to 1,300. And the company has seen a nearly 25% increase in profits.
Three basketball players from a small island country are playing at the highest level of American college sports. Thorir Thorbenarsson, Jon Axel Gudmundsson, and Hakon Hjalmarsson are the only Icelanders currently playing Division I basketball in the United States. Division I is the top level of American college sports. Schools that compete in Division I provide more athletic scholarships than other schools and have larger budgets for sports. The Icelandic players are on different teams. Thorbenarsson plays at the University of Nebraska. Gudmundsson plays at Davidson College in North Carolina. And Hjalmarsson plays at Binghamton University in the state of New York. Although they attend different schools, the three players communicate nearly every day and follow each other's games. Being so far away from home, the three players often lean on each other for support. "I know every basketball player in Iceland," Thorbenarsson said. "It's a small family. We call ourselves the basketball family." Iceland is an island in the North Atlantic Ocean. It has a population of about 360,000. In Iceland, basketball is less popular than soccer and about as popular as team handball. There are 6,800 registered male and female basketball players in the country, the Sports National Federation says. The best Icelandic basketball players must go to Europe or the United States to test themselves against top competition. Only one Icelander, Peter Gudmundsson, has played in the National Basketball Association in America. He played for three different teams in the 1980s. The three Icelandic players had different paths to American college sports, but they all knew each other before coming to America. "When you play with the youth national teams, you're always practicing in the same gyms. You're always around each other. You take trips together," Jon Axel Gudmundsson said. "And we played against each other in the adult league in Iceland, so we kind of grew close from there." The players have had different levels of success so far. Gudmundsson nearly led his team to a victory over the University of Kentucky in the 2018 NCAA tournament. He made 6 3-pointers in the second half of the game and finished with 21 points. Hjalmarsson started 10 straight games for Binghamton early this season, but he has received less playing time recently. "I think I'm progressing all right, but I'm not doing as well as I could. I have to be patient," he said. Hjalmarsson noted important differences between American and Icelandic basketball. "Coming here, I didn't think I would have to adjust to anything because I just thought it was basketball," Hjalmarsson said. "After being here a few months, it's a completely different sport." Hjalmarsson noted that some kinds of physical play are more common in Icelandic basketball. "It's more physical in Iceland, but I think guys here are more athletic. They're faster. They jump higher," he said. Gudmundsson noted that he always thinks about who he is representing. "Being from such a small town in such a small country," he added, "I feel it symbolizes the fact you can do whatever you want if you are willing to put work into it." I'm John Russell.
wake up in the morning. If you set an alarm on your phone or clock that sounds like this, that hard, unpleasant sound may be making it harder to shake off the sleepy feeling in the morning known as grogginess. So, is there a better way to wake up? A recent study says yes. The answer is music. Researchers say alarms that have a melody, like the beginning of this song, can help people feel fresher in the morning.
The study, carried out by researchers in Australia, involved 50 people. The study subjects answered questions about the alarm sound they like to wake up to, how they feel about that sound, and how they feel when they wake up. The findings appeared this month in the publication PLOS ONE. The researchers found that people who wake up to musical alarms reported feeling more awake and alert. Stuart McFarlane was a lead writer of the study. He told VOA, "We are very surprised by these findings, as one might expect a harsh beeping sound to be more successful at waking up a person." Sleep inertia is another term for grogginess. It means a person has a heavy feeling when waking up and has trouble getting moving again after sleeping.
McFarlane said people need to better understand sleep inertia's harmful effects on human performance later in the day. The grogginess we may feel in the morning usually lasts for up to 30 minutes, but he said it has been reported to last from 2 to 4 hours. Not everyone will experience the full effect, but for those who do, care should be taken when performing duties that require a top performance within this period, he said. This includes dangerous tasks like driving or riding our bikes shortly after waking up. The same is true for people who work in dangerous situations shortly after they wake. They include firefighters and pilots. Sleep inertia has been linked to major accidents, including airplane and shipping crashes.
So, what makes musical alarms better for waking up? The researchers think the music may be more successful in reducing sleep inertia because it has several tones compared to the single tone of a beeping alarm. McFarlane said that the changes over time between the music tones may help increase a person's attention when waking from sleep. But he added, "It is early days, though, and more work is needed to fully know the answer." And is there a kind of music that is best to wake up to? There may be, McFarlane said. "We could suggest alarm sounds that are tuneful and easy to hum or sing along with." The current sounds I have been using include Close to Me by The Cure, and Borderline by Madonna.
No matter how you wake up, experts say, the amount of sleep you get also matters a lot. I'm Ann Ball.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. There were many changes in the social customs and day-to-day life of millions of Americans during the administration of President Calvin Coolidge. Many young people began to challenge the traditions of their parents and grandparents. They experimented with new ideas and ways of living. People of all kinds became interested in the new popular culture. Radio and films brought them exciting news of court trials, sports heroes, and wild parties. The 1920s also was one of the most active and important periods for the more serious arts. Writers, painters, and other artists produced some of the greatest work in the nation's history. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe take a look at American arts during this exciting period.
Most Americans approved strongly of the economic growth and improved living conditions during the 1920s. They supported the conservative Republican policies of President Calvin Coolidge, and they had great faith in the country's business leaders and economic system. However, many of the nation's serious artists had a different and darker view of society. They were troubled deeply by the changes they saw. They believed that Americans had become too interested in money and wealth. These artists rejected the new business society, and they also questioned the value of politics. Many of them believed that the First World War in Europe had been a terrible mistake. These artists had little faith in the political leaders who came to power after the war. They felt a need to protest the way the world was changing around them.
The spirit of protest was especially strong in serious American writing during the 1920s. Many of the greatest writers of this period hated the new business culture. One such writer was Sinclair Lewis. He was the first American to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. Lewis wrote about Americans living in the towns and villages in the central part of the United States. Many of the people in his books were foolish men and women with empty values. They chased after money and popularity. In his famous book, Main Street, Lewis joked about and criticized small-town business owners. Social criticism also was central to the writing of the newspaper writer H. L. Mencken from the eastern city of Baltimore. Mencken considered most Americans to be stupid and violent fools. He attacked their values without mercy. Of course, many traditional Americans reacted strongly to such criticism. For example, some religious and business leaders attacked Mencken as a dangerous person whose words were treason against the United States. But many young people thought Mencken was a hero whose only crime was writing the truth.
The work of Lewis, Mencken, and a number of other writers of the 1920s has been forgotten by many Americans as the years have passed. But the period did produce some truly great writing. One of the greatest writers of these years was Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway wrote about love, war, sports, and other subjects. He used short sentences and rough words. His style was sharper and different from traditional American writing, and his strong views about life set him apart from most other Americans. Another major writer was F. Scott Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald wrote especially about rich Americans searching for happiness and new values. His books were filled with people who rejected traditional beliefs. His book, The Great Gatsby, is considered today to be one of the greatest works in the history of American writing. A third great writer of the 1920s was William Faulkner. Faulkner wrote about the special problems and ways of life in the American South. His books explored the emotional tension in a society still suffering from the loss of the Civil War 60 years before. Some of Faulkner's best books were The Sound and the Fury, As I Lay Dying, and Absalom, Absalom. Like Hemingway, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
The 1920s also produced the greatest writer of theater plays in American history, Eugene O'Neill. O'Neill was an Irish-American with a dark and violent view of human nature. His plays used new theatrical methods and ways of presenting ideas, but they carried an emotional power never before seen in the American theater. Some of his best-known plays were Morning Becomes Electra, The Iceman Cometh, and A Long Day's Journey into Night. A number of American writers also produced great poetry during the 1920s. Probably the most famous work was The Wasteland, a poem of sadness by the writer T.S. Eliot.
There also were important changes in American painting during the 1920s. Economic growth gave many Americans the money to buy art for their homes for the first time. 60 new museums opened. Slowly, Americans learned about serious art. Actually, American art had been changing in important ways since the beginning of the century. In 1908, a group of New York artists arranged a historic show. These artists tried to show real life in their paintings. They painted new kinds of subjects. For example, George Bellows painted many emotional and realistic pictures of the sport of boxing. His work and the painting of other realistic artists became known as the Ashcan School of Art. Another important group of modern artists was led by the great photographer Alfred Stieglitz. This group held a major art show in 1913 in New York, Chicago, and Boston. The show presented modern art from Europe. Americans got their first chance to see the work of such painters as Pablo Picasso and Georges Braque. The show caused a huge public debate in the United States. Traditional art critics accused the organizers of the show of trying to overthrow Christianity and American values. Former President Theodore Roosevelt and others denounced the new art as a threat to the country. However, many young American painters and art lovers did not agree. They became very interested in the new art styles from Europe. They studied them closely. Soon, Charles de Muth, Joseph Stella, and other American painters began to produce excellent art in the new Cubist style. John Marin painted beautiful views of sea coasts in New York and Maine, and such artists as Max Weber and Georgia O'Keeffe painted in styles that seemed to come more from their own imagination than from reality. As with writing, the work of many of these serious modern painters only became popular many years later.
The greatest American designer of buildings during the 1920s was Frank Lloyd Wright. Wright believed that architects should design a building to fit its location, not to copy some ancient style. He used local materials in new ways. Wright invented many imaginative methods to combine useful building design with natural beauty. But again, most Americans did not know of Wright's work. Instead, they turned to local architects with traditional beliefs. These architects generally designed old and safe styles for buildings, for homes, offices, colleges, and other needs.
Writers and artists now look back at the roaring 1920s as an extremely important period that gave birth to many new styles and ideas. Hemingway's style of writing continues to influence American writers. Many painters say the period marked the real birth of modern American art. And architecture students in the United States and other countries now study the buildings of Frank Lloyd Wright. The changes in American society caused many of these artists much sadness and pain in their personal lives. But their expression of protest and rich imagination produced a body of work that has grown in influence with the passing years.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.